Now for something completely different.
Smoke medical.
We eat every day.
The following thoughts on Hoppy Hour represent Ryan Hoppy and Fastit. Listener discretion is advised.
Live from Tampa Bay, you are tuned in to Hoppy Hour.
He's the voice of a generation that got screwed by the baby boomers. Welcome back to Hoppy Hour.
Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour starts in 4, 3, 2, Hoppy, Hoppy, Hoppy. This is Hoppy Hour with Hoppy.
Let's get right into it. On the phone line, I've been listening to this guy for 15 years now when I first found his podcast in 2008. From the Preston and Steve Morning Show on WMMR in Philadelphia, Steve Morrison is on Hoppy Hour. What's up, man?
Ryan, how are you, man? I appreciate the invitation today.
So you're going to find this fascinating. So growing up, I had a speech impediment, so I had a hard time saying words that had ST in it. So I've been wanting to interview you for about 8 years, but I didn't know how to say words like Preston and Steve. But I got a speech coach back in the summer, and I found out that the way I was placing my tongue, I was putting my tongue on my teeth, and you have to put it on your gum. And ever since then, I've fixed it. So once I fixed it, I was like, I got to get them on.
You know, well, I appreciate that. I appreciate the dental work or the whatever involved with you getting up to speed on the ST sound. And I commend you for doing that. A lot of broadcasters would not take that extra jump.
Well, I reached the point where I did sports radio for about 9 months, and I was having panic attacks because I was reading the headlines on air. And the problem would be like Houston Astros win the World Series or whatever. And I literally was asking the host, can we not talk about that? Because I don't want to read it on air. And that's when I was like,
yeah.
I was like, I think I need to adjust something. So I'm very grateful to have you here. Yeah.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate you listening. It's funny you bring up the speech issues and so on and so forth. For the past couple of years, I've had jaw issues, and I've had some dental work done to sort of alleviate that. And and with each one, you'd kind of say, "Do I sound a little bit different now? Am I being a little extra slurry with the S's or whatever?" But I found that if for people who have big toothy smiles, when anything like that happens, it can screw up the way you're pronouncing things on air. But I kid you not, on air, I had a tooth fall out, and I was just simply, through a straw, I had the tooth had gotten loose, I'd hit it, I forget exactly what had happened, but the tooth fell out on air, and I had to tell them that the tooth had fallen out because the way my mouth is, my mouth doesn't open wide when I'm enunciating, so I was able to hide it until I finally thought to myself, okay, I've got to tell them that I'm missing a tooth, and it became a good radio segment. But yeah, I understand the fear of how you sound and words that are going to prove formidable when you're trying to say them.
Well, especially for you, you're doing a morning talk show where you guys talk for pretty much the whole morning. So it's like when you're in your head, I feel like you're projecting, like you want to act like it's not there. But at some point you kind of have to say something, because at least for me, it'll make me anxious, like where it's like you got to say something, because it almost relieves your anxiety if you say something.
Yeah, well, you don't, you've been trained. So, I went to school, years and years and years ago for radio, film, and television. And radio was the on the low end of the totem pole. Still loved it. It was always a huge radio fan, but I thought, TV and film would be the thing for me. And I'd always wanted to do stuff based on comedy, long story short. So, but I remember, in the early days of the radio, there were certain rules about how you conducted yourself and what you did. And, people like Howard and other, sort of innovators in broadcasting, they relaxed that ironclad rule of, I'm not saying being unprofessional, but being straight up when something was effed up or just being not, it's not even a case of lying. It's just simply, these are things you were taught to not do or to, you know, to just start blabbering on about. And so that was all part of it. But yeah, what eventually happened is that people just said, ah, the hell with it. I'm just going to mention that I have this going on, and it relaxes things. You're exactly right. You get out of your own head and then you just proceed.
I think one thing that I've always liked about you and Preston's show over the last 15 years is it legit feels like I know you. I am just meeting you for the first time. And for about the last almost 20 years, like, I listen to you guys about 3 or 4 times a week via the podcast. And it's so weird. Like, you don't know who I am, but I know who you are. I know who Kathy is. I know who Casey is. I know who Preston is. Is that weird for you at times? Because you guys are in one of the biggest markets and you guys absolutely crush it. Do a lot of people tell you that they feel like they know who you are?
Yeah, and then they sort of get like apologetic, you know, or like it's intrusive. And I'm like, no, that's exactly the dynamic we want. Because I mean, and I don't, you know, this isn't blowing smoke. This is the truth. And I think you can echo this sentiment. You've had your years in radio and your various jobs, you know, and broadcasting. You owe the people who support and listen to your show everything. And so there is that familial sense. You do, whether you don't know them in person, there's a collective and they're part of it. And you know, it is a massively humbling and amazing thing to have that situation going on. So people come up and go, does this seem creepy? And I said, no, we talk about ourselves, you know, on the air. We talk about what's going on, and it's an honor that they've retained that and they think of us as friends. The visual image I have in my mind every morning is that we are this massive group of people in a car driving to work, talking about whatever. And so that's how I feel about everyone. I mean, anytime we've ever had an event or a charity or whatever, an appearance, and people come out and they take time out of their day, their evening, whatever, you know, whatever, if it involves getting a babysitter or whatever age they are, or, you know, they've disrupted their schedule to participate in something, to be with us or to hang with us. And so that sense of family, that sense of them knowing us, is everything. I think that, you know, knowing what I know of you, Ryan, that sounds like what you strive for as well.
Yes. And, I've worked for, various radio shows, and there's almost, I don't want to say there's regret, because I just turned 30. I know that's young, but I think the only thing that's crazy about when you work on like a talk show compared to like being like a music DJ for 10 seconds is you get so honest about your life that everybody knew who my ex-girlfriend was. Everybody knows about everybody knows about my dad or my mom. And there's this thing where sometimes I feel like you really want to entertain the audience and you want to give the best content. And from now on, like, I'm going to be keeping my dating life private and other things private, because it's crazy. Like, I'll have people come up to me every once in a while at like Publix or whatever, and they're like, remember when you did this on there? And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I haven't thought about that in 6 years. So what is your medium? How much do you say on air? And has there ever been something that you've said on air that you're like, I probably should not have said that?
Well, a couple of times, you know, and I may have upset my wife or, you know, that standard dynamic. And she, of course, was right every time. But ultimately what happened was that we sort of picked our levels, because I'm usually I'm the comedy guy. I'm the commenting guy. Yeah. I'm the assessing guy. I'm, if you hear a lot of clomping in the way, my dog has just come into the room here. 1 second. But long story short, you know, I probably of everyone, talk the least about, ratio wise, you know, I'm amazed. Preston is a completely open book. Kathy's a completely open book. Casey, you know, that Nick as well. I think because I am back in the commenting on, comedic, riffing on, building on what they're saying sort of thing, I might do it less, because I'm just an absurd entity to begin with. But you know, ultimately, the rule is, you know, if it's something that's really impactful and you don't want to go near it, you know, we'll say, like, somebody will bring up something and they'll say, I don't know. And the rule is, instead of them having a hand ring about whether they say it on the air or not, we always say, listen, if you have a second thought, don't forget it. We've got more than enough to go with. Don't end up effing up something in your life and creating a hellacious situation, you know, just for content. We can always find content. We can always generate stuff. It's not worth, and I think anyone who's human gets that. You would not want to co-op someone's situation, you know, and or pain and or potential pain, or to create something that might be difficult down the road for, you know, 10 minutes of radio. I'm amazed at people who've done it. I also know for a fact, and you know this, a lot of people create BS scenarios,
yes,
that aren't real, dynamics that don't exist, that over-exaggerate stuff. So in the early days of formulating the show, we tried to figure out where exactly we want to sit. So, you know, that really has to do with, as you said, and you're very kind to say, you know, that you know us, you feel that you know us. That's part of that, is that, you know, kind of, when you're hearing something that's happened, it's legitimately happened. When you're hearing a situation that occurred, it legitimately occurred. And you know that, there, as with anybody, there's going to be stuff we don't mention. I had prostate cancer in 2014, and I was, you know, I got through the whole thing. And immediately when I did, I went on air and talked about it and had my doctor come in and all that stuff. And it's like, you know, that's part of the deal is that, and it was really just a way of encouraging people to say, hey, look, it's a simple blood test to save my life. Here I am. You can do it too. And, you know, the feedback on that was great. So the second you start co-opting and your audience, you start creating, you know, can I curse or is that, I don't know?
Yeah, you can say whatever the fuck you want.
All right. Any bullshit stories, you know, that's when you're going to have an issue. So, you know, when we say something's happened, it's happened. And likewise, you know, that permeates everything. Every goddamn thing on the show, even to the advertisers or the commercials. We can't. It's amazing. People, I'll have workers come over to the house or whatever. They'll go into the bedroom. Oh, you do have a Sleep Number bed. I'm like, yes. Like, no, we you can't. If you bullshit on that, if you compromise that relationship, there's nothing that's valid. You know what I'm saying? And again, as with everything, if everything is tumultuous and your boss always sucks and everything is always one way, then it's really never that way because the audience can never gauge what's real and what's not. So, you know, I've seen so many, we've seen so many shows, I'm sure you have as well, where they kind of take that for granted and then they find themselves in this quagmire of trying to, you know, figure out how the audience perceives them and how they put on the show. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm a radio geek, so I pretty much know what you're saying. So here's one thought I had when I was thinking about you guys' legacy is I grew up in Chicago. I grew up listening to Man Cow's Morning Madhouse, and I liked listening to other radio shows. I liked Opie and Anthony. And I think the one thing that you guys really did that Stern also did was, let's say 15 years ago, you guys reinvented yourself. And I think that's why you guys are thriving and doing so well is the fact that you guys are real and you guys saw, you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, but the writing on the wall with cancel culture, that it wasn't as cool to be raunchy because you guys are like clean, but you're not clean. You guys ride the fine line. That's what I respected about you guys.
No, you're an astute listener. So, I mean, listen, there was a time. There's a couple of things that have to happen. In a way, and I'll throw this out there. So, you know, I know the Opie and Anthony guys. I was friends with them. And a friend of mine, producer Rick Delgado, was their producer for the longest time. And they all, you know, at all of the shows that really pushed the boundaries and did so many times, all of them, you know, did it brilliantly. But when everything switched over and you had it sort of carte blanche and they were ending up on satellite or whatever, a weird dynamic occurred, which is if you have no line to cross, you could never cross the line. You know what I'm saying? So it's weird. It's like when a curse slips out, you know, you're watching a football game or something and it picks up on the mic and you'll say, did you hear that? You know, yet you can turn one channel away and you know, and watch bestiality, you know, with the Girl Scout troop, you know, on some, so it's like, why is that? Why does that resonate? Because that's not where you would normally hear it. And in a way, in a bizarre way, us couching and coming up with different ways to say things almost makes it worse. But you're right, clean but not clean. And that's, you know, that's the dynamic that works for us. So you know, in a way, we've always kind of thought of ourselves as sort of a lampoon of a zoo show.
Yes.
Like, in other words, the model that I think we were most going after was Conan in the earlier days, Letterman in the earlier days, a self-knowing parody of morning shows, you know, like just explosive applause when something would happen or every, you know, when Preston and I first started working together, I would do live cut-ins from a club. I never met Preston for the first year and a half that we worked together. I was in a club, you know, and we were conversing over the T1 line. And so I'd be every time I was at this club, I'd say, by the way, as you know, tonight is the biggest party night of the year. And, you know, of course it was completely disingenuous. And I did it to overhype the event, whatever it was. And so there's always a tongue in cheek thing that we're doing that the audience completely gets, and I think that's sort of the fun with it.
I picked up on it when you guys do your sports report and you have all the over the top sound effects. It makes me smile every time.
Yeah, that cacophonous thing, and it's funny when people have never heard it are saying, what the fuck is this? You know, I mean, because it's supposed to be such a nuclear celebratory sports theme, and it just started to add on so much so. Now we have people who either love it or hate, especially the Nick scream, or they did it, but it's part of that. But yeah, I'm glad you enjoy that. That cracks me up every time, especially when we're out at a live broadcast and that comes up, especially at what it's usually 6:15 in the morning.
Yeah.
And this explosive sound kicks in and everyone's head spin around.
Over the years, obviously you guys have a ton of listeners and you guys are very successful and, a lot of good things have happened for you, but what have you thought about the haters? Have haters ever bothered you?
To be honest, I've always taken it this way. I'm putting myself out there. I spend a lot of the morning making fun. No, mind you, this, I never have listeners, never of people in the audience, never that. Always people kind of put themselves for that, quasi celebrities, and you know, and I'll get, you know, wrong about it. I always, a lot of times, you know, someone will die, say an actress in her 90s or whatever, and I always falsify the obituary report when, you know, it's like, it's my understanding she was, you know, clawed to death by a puma or whatever, but that's all because of that. I can never get, you don't like me, I get it. You know, there are times I don't like me, but I'll tell you this, you know, in the broad scheme of things, Ryan, is that we haven't cultivated that kind of audience, you know? And so I remember there's some shows that I was, you know, completely, you know, tied into and knew, you know, the people on it. They sort of cultivated that audience. I'm not going to, you know, hang anybody out to dry. And then in a while, what happens is they eventually find themselves loathing their own audience. Yes. You know what I'm saying? So that's a play. That's got to be what circle of hell is that? You know, where you've been so acrimonious, so vindictive or just caustic. And I, you know, I don't buy this toxic this, toxic that bullshit. You know, it's like, you know, shutting down comedians, you know, people going to a show and not realizing the comedian's material and then freaking out because they're doing exactly what the other people in the room have paid to hear her do. But I think ultimately, you know, you put out a vibe and you usually get it back. And there's a great episode of the show Frasier where he's, you know, just cruising along on the ratings. and he's just, you know, killing it. And, you know, he does this talk show in Seattle, as, you know, there's the conceit of the sitcom.
Great show.
And, yeah, and he encounters this one guy who does, and the guy isn't even that, he just says, I don't think too much of the show. And this eats away at him, like so much so that I think by the end of it, he accidentally sets the guy's newsstand on fire. So, you know, it's like, not everyone's going to like you, you know. And then also, I always say this, consider, like I've always joked, you can post a picture of Snuggles, the fabric softener bear on your Instagram account. Yeah. And the third comment down will be, I hate that motherfucker. You know, it's like somebody somewhere has got an axe to grind with everything. And if you let that tear you up, you're going to be in a world of hurt. And always consider the source of the practiced and consistent troll.
Yes.
I've always said, like, I'll talk to people on the show and I say, you know, the sentence has already been passed on this person. They're having to live as that person.
I know.
You
I
know, that right? Well, and so what's your methodology? What do you do?
So I began radio at a very young age. Right out of high school, I went into it at age 18. I did college radio. And then I briefly worked with Rover. And it wasn't the best match. Because, and then I worked for Calta for 7 years.
No.
And the thing is, you really got to read the room when it comes to listeners. Because I'm telling you, there's a lot of mean listeners of both of those shows. And now I'm doing my own thing and doing very well. But the thing I always remember is I don't know these people. I'll get a comment, oh, you suck at radio or whatever. And I go to click on their profile. Yeah. And they got like the Punisher logo as their profile picture. And then you can't click on their, you can't click on their profile. So I tell myself, I have the guts and the audacity to put myself out there and grind. And these people are hiding behind a keyboard. And you really got to think about that person might be having a screaming kid in their living room and a wife they don't like, or they're at a job they hate.
Yeah.
And they hate seeing somebody going after their dream. And there's something that happened in their life. Because like when I've typed in you guys on Reddit, there's people that legit want you guys to, I don't want to say die, but they hate you guys. And there's no reason to hate you guys. You guys are cool as hell. I think it just comes with radio, especially the open and honest shows. People don't like people that have skeletons in the closet, the ones that cheat on their wives or do sketchy things, don't like when a radio person like me is open about my sex life or open about what I do. It drives them nuts because they go, I wish I had the authenticity of that person. And that's what drives haters nuts. And I think the thing I've really learned, like I just saw this rapper from Sarasota who's really popular locally. He posts the mean emails he gets from people that tell him you're a loser or whatever. And I go, I commented today, don't let that get to you. And he comments back, oh, it doesn't. It motivates me. I go, but you're posting it. Like I will get mean DMs, bro. And I just delete it. I don't give those people the time of day. You got to remember, this is from my angle, how I think about it. They are fans, but they don't know how to be fans. Because if they care that much and the 24 hours in a day they are given, they make a Reddit topic about you, you are winning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, everybody, I mean, it's part of the deal. For Christ's sake, everybody's got, and Reddit is one of the more, you know, just vitriolic about everything. And everyone knows, you know, and by the way, people always say, they, you know, they'll ignore the fact that a lot of times what will happen is you'll have, and now mind you, we have a good situation in Philadelphia. There's, you know, there's enough audience to go around. We're happy to be where we are in the ratings for sure, but everyone's getting their, you know, the piece of the pie and you do what you do. Our mindset is always that we're in fourth or fifth place. You know, we're happy to be, you know, where we are, you know, we're higher. I'll just say that, but that said, you always have to earn it. I mean, you know, that's why the old adage is, that's why Baskin and Robbins make so many flavors. It's like, you know, everyone, you're not going to please everyone. You go for the most that you can. You cast the widest net as a morning show, and you bring a lot of people through. But you know, that's just part of the deal. I'm totally fine with it. If people want to get pissed off, that is that, you know, that I get it. Go ahead. But I mean, for the most part, it is nothing that ever impacts me. It is nothing that ever throws the show off. You know, it's nothing that's ever, lingers too long with anybody's psyche on the show, because it's, you know, the litmus test is in. You know, we have earned the positions, you know, through what are considered industry awards and so on and so forth. We don't know how the hell that happened. We don't know how we're in these different, you know, when we got the call about the National Radio Hall of Fame, like clearly, and I'm not even saying this remotely, excessively humbly to say, we were like, are you gotta be kidding? Really? Because we are our own worst critics. I can't think of a better way to approach that than knowing that, it's always a daily struggle to do the best you can, you know, and we'll beat ourselves up well before anybody else will. We'll come out of a break and go, man, what now, you know, I'll say, you know, I wasn't feeling it on that, or that just didn't seem right. And so that built-in protection system keeps you from really taking dings over what comes in over Twitter, I don't do a lot of social media perusing to begin with. I haven't been on Facebook in years. I guess I'm kind of more Twitter and Instagram. And I got to tell you, the bulk of what I get, you can say off the industry, comments, because they're, you know, that's going to be problematic. But ultimately, again, I say if the mission is to wound, it's always going to fall short, you know?
Well, it's that. And the other thing I think is there's something about getting up really early in the morning. And I, I'm a guy, like today I had my day off and I slept until 10:30 or 11 ish. I love sleeping in because of my ADD. I just love sleeping as much as possible. And there's this,
right.
There's this certain anxiety about talking to a radio audience while you're really tired, because I've done midday and afternoon radio, and to me that's a little bit easier because you like sleep in and that. But there's some nights that, like, when I was doing Celta's show or Rover show, there's times I couldn't sleep till 11 and you have to get up at 5 and you're like, there's no other option. Like, I got to go to work. And I think sometimes that leads to the overthinking because you're tired and you're very caffeinated, or maybe you're high or whatever to help you get ready for the show. And it's like, afterwards, I'll like listen and I'll be like, wow, that was really good. To me, whenever I think my show is the shit is when my show is average. But whenever I am thinking, oh, that was the worst show ever, that's probably when you have your best work. It's very bizarre.
Yeah. Keep yourself even keel. That's the best thing to do, because I love when we're tired. So I go to bed. I'm up at 3:30. I go to bed, I go up to bed around 9. I go to sleep around 10:30, 11. I exist on very little sleep during the week. It's just the way I do. My body's kind of wired that way. But when we have an appearance, or it's a long thing and you're a little sluggish at the end of the show, when we just start, you know, when Alex Haley couldn't find the roots to the beginning of the conversation, that's our favorite part. And I'm usually the incendiary element of getting us off track, or, you know, Casey does a good job of that as well and gives me fodder for stuff to come in. Preston is the ultimate, you know, captain as far as keeping the momentum of the whole show moving. But I agree. There's, again, good rule of thumb is, you know your place, know that it's that the audience deserves you always trying your hardest. Know, give yourself the permission to F up, but don't, the second you think your crap doesn't stink, you are in a world of hurt. And It'll come raining. We've seen it over the decades. Careers just come crashing down because people are so sure they're on the money. And so they don't try to evolve. One thing we did learn, though, Ryan, years ago, is that like when I come from stand up or comedy or, my earlier years, I'm like you, I'm ADD, so I would tire of the stuff quickly, and I'd always want to. That's why I started doing improvisational comedy and doing all that. But the truth of the matter is, I'd have a joke. I did that already. But if the audience likes something that you've done and they want you to do it again and it made them happy and they like a character or they like a sound or they like something, do it. Do it. Savor the fact that you're doing exactly what you're on air to do. And you don't want to, inflate yourself and say, well, I'm basically the Mother Teresa of radio. No. But I mean, it is the conduit. You do want to make people happy. You do want to entertain them. And so, I think a lot of people, I used to think, oh, that was just, you're just cheapening. You're just repeating jokes. Well, SNL, when they find a character that clicks, they strangle the hell out of it. So in a way, mission one is to keep the audience happy. And also, that goes right into mission two, which is to earn your airtime every day.
And I think that's what has made you guys so good at radio is the fact that you guys are not dicks to your audience. I don't want to say any names, but we can all think of shows over the years that just were absolute assholes to their audience. And then when they're in their 50s and they're not on the radio, they're like, why does everyone hate me? And it's because you were like making fun of your callers in that. Like, why are they going to want to stick with you over the years?
So stop and think about this. You know this, all right? Again, going back to my earlier point, never ripping on the audience. I know a number of shows. Again, I know them. I know the people, and they're good people. And I tearing apart a caller. Oh. I'm like, someone is supporting your show. Yeah. They've called up. They're nervous. They haven't been on the radio, maybe. They don't know how it works. They're hearing you on hold. For that one moment, you're gonna F them up by coming at them or mocking them or making fun. I mean, there's never been anything that's appetizing to me to just go for low-hanging fruit. We'll have fun with listeners, but I think you hear people call in we love that. We love the interaction. It's cheap shots at your main conduit, your main supporters. So, and it doesn't make any sense.
I've been a fan of you guys for a while, but I really began listening to you guys during COVID because I felt like a lot of shows were getting really mean. And you guys were like one of the shows, because I was living in a small little house at that time and I was working at 102.5 The Bone and going home and just doing that every day. And you guys were like one of the five shows I listened to that kind of relaxed me because I felt like everybody else was angry and just being mean during COVID. And you guys just were like, yeah, we have a pandemic going on, but you guys never left your roots of just doing your show.
No, I agree. Listen, I appreciate that. And there was a, we decided pretty quickly, a number of years ago, we are going to avoid politics like the plague.
Yes.
Everyone has gotten. I subscribe to the notion that I have been wrong in my life. So I kind of do want to hear differing opinions now and then because I've actually changed my mind on certain things. I think if you've shown me the person who's never changed their mind or believes they've never been wrong, and there's someone really. It's going to happen. But that said, everyone gets very passionate, and it became their almost a lot of people's religion. So that was one. Number two, you were getting COVIDed out the yin yang. I mean, it was insane. I think there was a real lapse in clarity for what the media was supposed to do during that. And man, there seemed to be a lot of stations and a lot of TV networks committed to scaring the shit out of people instead of providing hope. So if you wanted that, you knew where to go. but we weren't going to talk about it. We were, and you know what happened, Ryan? This is something else. Everything came to a screeching halt. So our years of knowing where to generate topics, knowing where to get, you know, to fill up 5 hours, you know, with stuff that was not, that was distracting you from the crap, you know, was already in our wheelhouse. And so it did work out. You're not the first person to say that. And I do appreciate you saying that, because it meant a lot to be doing that. It means a lot to hear people say that back to us, because, you know, you give a rat's ass about people listening, and you don't want them to freak out, and you don't want them to be depressed. And, you know, on any given day, Ryan, you could be talking to someone who's really at the end of their rope and is making some, you know, possibly really bad decisions, and you can maybe in a nanosecond or a few minutes of your show can dissuade them from that. Again, not overinflating what we do, but it can happen, and that's you know, that is something that's very important to us.
Now, before I let you go, when it's all said and done, because you guys just signed a massive deal and you guys are killing it in the ratings and you're having all these famous people on, but when it's all said and done, how do you want people to remember your show?
Well, you know, it's funny, because we would want, you talk about these shows that got really aggressively angry and pissed off and caustic, and something that Preston and I said from the beginning, which is when our, you know, when our heads hit our various pillows at night, we want to know that we didn't screw up anyone, we didn't make, you know, anyone sad, that we did the best we could. And that, you know, if the legacy is to continue, or if we have anything that carries on past that, that people will look back and say that, you know, that we provided something that they really enjoyed, and that we weren't just what they listened to. They were the events. We were the events that they attended, the charities they supported. And you know, to me, in a lot of ways, that's what sports does for so many people. You know, it gives this distraction, or this thing to feel invested in, this thing to feel part of a collective, or part of a family. And I think that's our, and I think you would probably say this too, you know, that's a great gift to be given to anyone. And it's an honor to be able to do that. And so in a very verbose way, that would be the legacy that I'd want to live on past us.
Now, for people that have not heard your show yet, how can they find your show if they don't live in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, well, it's very easy. It's PrestonandSteve.com, WMMR.com. We're streaming. We're also on YouTube. You can look for us on YouTube. The show is broadcast daily. Again, what happened was, you know, in the beginning days, we had the idea when we were coming on to this legacy, legendary WMMR. You know, everyone's had a show that they like go off and be replaced by the new guys, and it sucks. You like that show that you listen to, and who are these bastards that have screwed up your listening patterns? So, you know, we never acted as if we were entitled to it, and we just said, hey, give us a chance. If you don't like us, we understand. But if you any show has to be digested over a while to kind of get the trends and try to get, you know, the understanding of who the people are and what it means. And so if you're gonna check us out, we appreciate it. You know, give a listen. And the podcasting we got too early, and you know, it served us well. And a lot of people, really a large portion of our audience does listen through the podcast. So it's all good. And you know, honestly, stop and think about it. You know, you're doing, Ryan, something you love. We're doing something that we love. You know, there's really not a lot to complain about.
Well, what's funny is I was never a hater of you guys, but early on as like a teenager, I liked the more angry radio, and I was like, oh, those guys are so fun and friendly. And now that I'm like older, I prefer listening to you guys over angry radio, and I've become bigger fans of you guys over the years. Cause like, you know, about the radio wars, I was like, oh, those guys are not that bad. But now you guys are what I listen to. Like as I've gotten older, I prefer not being yelled at.
Yeah. Look, I'd always say this, cause it's all a creation. It's a fiction, that stuff. And it was part of radio for a while. You remember the big Free FM experiment?
Yes.
You know, where every show, like I would never hire like a fucking plumber who pissed and moaned and complained, you know, throughout the job. Why am I going to listen to someone who's got a media job, probably making some pretty good money, who hates everything? It's like the constant need to create anger, you know. And it's like, I remember getting a text from somebody, or no, an email from someone saying, you never seem pissed off. Like, that was the criticism. Well, I mean, you know, we're not going to create a fake anger, create fake fights on the show, which so many of them are. We don't subscribe to the fake dynamic. We have fun with our bosses, but we don't fucking hate them. You know, I mean, I mean, if we did, we wouldn't resign, for Christ's sake. I mean, stop and think about it. In the early days, with Casey as our producer, why is that idiot your producer? I got news for you. He's a great producer. Yeah. By my reckoning, he's the best in the country. Preston as well. Casey, you know, but he's a twofer. He's an on-air talent, and he's that. Stop and think about it. If he really was that horrible, he wouldn't be on the show. So there was this, again, when you talk about generating a fan base you grow to despise, we've never had that. We've always loved the people who support the show. And you, to your exact point, that kind of thinking, that kind of vitriol, that kind of dour approach is just going to come around and bite you in the ass. And I know you've seen it. I've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
And so you're very astute, Ryan, on your takes on these things.
Well, it's because I've worked in it for so long, and I've actually ended up working for people that I listen to. And that's the weirdest thing, is when you meet your heroes at events or a morning show boot camp, and you're like, oh my God, are you an asshole? It's like kind of a deflating situation, because I haven't met you guys, but you guys seem nicer than some of the shows I grew up listening to. And I'm like, it kind of makes you, because like, there was something about radio 15 years ago where a lot of the millennials like me were angry teenagers. So it was kind of, it was kind of a cult to be angry, because we were all hormonal and we're trying to get laid and it was very sexual in the 2000s.
Yeah.
But now as I'm a 30-year-old man, I'm like, you guys are like fine wine. Like, you guys get better with age. It's ridiculous.
No, we appreciate it, man. It means a lot. You're spot on. That's been the mission statement. And again, it's not because we're orchestrating or faking it. It's just who wants to live that freaking way?
And I've worked on shows that do that, and you go home angry, and you're tired from being up in the morning, and you're angry, and you're getting DMs and tweets all morning how much you suck. That is not the vibe, bro.
Dude, I don't want to know. I don't want to imagine that the guy I'm listening to goes home and continues working on his manifesto. I would like to think that we talk about the shit that we like. We talk about the things that engage us. We get to meet cool people. We get to meet the listeners. And again, the vast bulk of people in your life, as you walk around, Ryan, the best people in your life, are they perpetually pissed off? Are they just completely, just absolutely incensed about everything? No, it's a fiction. And any show that was projecting that was a fiction. So, and anyone that wasn't, they eventually wound their internal organs up so tightly that they imploded. So it's no way to live. And our approach seems to work out. Again, you're spot on with your assessment. It's a better place to be. You know, again, we're not the PTL club, for Christ's sake, but we're I think we strive to be human.
I was super nervous about doing this interview, but man, this was a very fun 44 minutes, man. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Ryan. You're a good interviewer. I really appreciate it.
Happy hour. Happy hour.